Welcome back to Toys on Tap. This week is an incredible week with Steve Cassino coming on and talking about his time in the toy industry, what he does full-time, and then all the stuff he does in the indie toy world and how he's a part of shows and so much more. If you want more Toys on Tap, you can like, follow, rate, review wherever you get podcasts. You can jump on all socials at Toys on Tap. And if you want to take an extra step, you can join the Patreon, patreon.com/toysontap. It's where we post the nitty gritty, the video interviews, all that. And if you want even more, you can check out our YouTube channel with toy unboxings and more. Now let's get to this week's episode of Toys on Tap.
I can hear you loud and clear.
Okay, good. Now it's working.
Hey, you look clean shape. You look great.
Thank you.
You did it. Thanks for working with me on time and stuff.
No problem.
Every once in a while, meetings get stacked, and so it kind of takes up interview space, and that's a big old bummer.
Yeah, I can understand that.
I'm pumped that you're on, though. I feel like we've like crossed paths or been in the same shows, and I've seen your name a lot, and I've seen, I think you were on Dove's thing not that long ago.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And so it's like, God, Toys on Tap is the place for you to get to. So
yeah, I've been I just watched your show today with my pal Disgustin Justin.
Yeah.
He's kind of a local guy. I'm in Cincinnati and he's in Columbus, but he comes down here for the Earth to Kentucky events.
Yeah.
So I met him through there.
Yeah, he's a cool cat. He was on here. I mean, at this point now we're getting to where it's like most toy artists have been on here. And now I'm getting the ones that I should have gotten a long time ago and haven't yet. So, yeah, and I'm glad that you're here. So I'm cool. This episode's for you, and I can't wait to hear all things about you and your life. But
sounds good.
Before we start, can you introduce yourself? Tell us who you are and what you do.
I'm Steve Cassino. I'm a toy inventor by trade, and I also do art, all kinds of different art. I do some custom toys, but I do a lot of just different types of things. Peanut art. It all started with peanut art. Maybe we can talk about that later.
Oh yeah.
I just throw it out cryptically.
Yeah. I also didn't know you were. I think I did know you were an inventor because I saw old diagrams that you had like drawn up and stuff.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I'm pumped. Usually, how we start this is I got to hear about your childhood, what you grew up with, what toys you played with, that kind of stuff. So take me all the way back.
Okay. Well, actually, this is good because I was just talking about this the other day, but I gravitated towards the weirdest toys as a kid. And yeah. I don't know if it was like Mad Magazine that influenced me, but there were these, the first thing I can remember, these cars called Farbs, and they're made by Hot Wheels, but they're human racers, and they were cars, but they were actually people. Mm. And the whole chassis of the car was a human being. With like an engine sticking out of its ass and stuff. So I remember just seeing these weird toys and I loved them. And and then there are these toys called Marxies from Mark's Toys. And they had a huge line of like just the weirdest, like an ear of corn driving a car and a gas pump driving a car. And I don't know, you have to look them up because they're literally like must hundreds, not even a hundred, but they had just a guitar driving a gas pump.
Yeah. You know?
Just like really. So I would go to the store with my grandma and I'd see those and she'd like let me pick out a toy and I would grab this, like, I remember distinctly an ear of corn driving a Model T.
Yeah.
And the ear of corn has a face, like buck teeth and stuff. So
just yeah, nonsense.
They're very attractive to me.
That kind of stuff. It stuck with you up until now. And so does that kind of like impact the kind of art that you do and all that kind of stuff?
Oh, definitely.
Okay. You know,
it's no, you know, coincidence that every eyeball that I draw has veins coming in it and stuff, because all that stuff. There's another thing called flying things, and they were these styrofoam airplanes, and you get them in a pack and assemble them, but they were like just the weirdest creatures as airplanes, like big eyeballs jutting out and things like that.
So, are you talking about the ones that come in like the flat pack almost, and you like punch? Yeah, I loved those as a kid.
Yeah.
Did that kind of like those kind of weird things, did you ever move into like normal, I say normal, but like Star Wars and G.I. Joe and that kind of stuff? Or did you just stay firmly in that?
No, I always had a foot in that. But once I was introduced to like Marvel Comics, I was really into like the episodic nature, like Spider-Man and the crossovers and things like that. So I was really into comic books. And Wacky Packages was actually another early thing that it was just, you know, it just blew my mind as a kid that these things made fun of the corporate world.
You know? Yeah.
That I love that so much. And so I guess I did collect Star Wars, and I had some Mego figures like Spider-Man and the Hulk and stuff. But I'd always go for the weird stuff. Stretch Armstrong.
Oh yeah.
It was kind of it was a very mainstream toy, but it was actually very weird. Stretch Monster. So I like those. Yeah. I think those are probably the last toys I played with, and then I aged out.
Yeah. Stretch Armstrong was such a weird, I have one tattooed on me because it's,
oh, you do?
Yeah. It was such a weird thing that I had, I don't know whose it was when I was a little kid, but it somehow had made it 20 years from the 70s or whatever.
Wow.
And then I had, what was the end? Vac-Man, was that the enemy? I can't, whatever the red guy was, that you could like blow him up or shrink him down, like that. Those toys were so weird. And then all of a sudden I didn't have access to them at a certain point. It was like I had moved on or something, had gotten rid of them. And I wish I never had.
Yeah, well, they kind of fell apart eventually.
Yeah.
Well, my era in the 70s, Stretch Armstrong's villain was Stretch Monster.
Okay.
And he's the green guy. And we actually, in Cincinnati, at our design studio, we have him on the side of the building, a Jonathan Queen mural. And it's Stretch Monster being stretched across the building. And people who visit Cincinnati go there and they pretend they're stretching him and take photo ops.
Oh, that's awesome. Cool. Like as I do like toy history or look up different things, one of the weird things, when they were trying to figure out Stretch Armstrong as a toy, there was, I don't know who the person was, I can't remember their name, but there was someone that suggested just throw springs in the toy and see what happens. And it was like, that's like a very iconic early 70s and 80s and 90s thing. Like, let's just put dangerous things in there and stretch them.
Spring Armstrong.
Yeah. And so, yeah, that was crazy. So you aged out, and art has to be in your background. It has to be based on what you do now. So where did that start kicking in?
I did art in high school, but I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I wanted to be a comic book artist, you know, probably most kids want to be.
Yeah.
But I wasn't anywhere near good enough. You know, I couldn't draw like straight stuff like superheroes. I just, all my drawing was always a wonky. So I ended up going to the Rochester Institute of Technology for graphic design. And I got there and I didn't even know what graphic design was. It just sounded like something my mother would let me go to school for.
Yeah.
So I went in there, and while I was there, I saw all these like industrial design students, and they had these really cool renderings of cars and appliances and things like that. And I'm like, that's pretty cool. I'd like to try that. So eventually I made my way into industrial design, but I was like the worst industrial designer in history. Cause the whole time I just wanted to draw like, you know, weird stuff.
Yeah.
And, while I was in college, I took a lot of illustration electives, and, I graduated. Well, I actually didn't graduate. I was awarded a diploma 30 years later from the school, but that's another story. But once I got out, I just moved to New York, and so I had a really well-rounded skill set from doing industrial design. where you learn model making and rendering and things like that. So I just hopped from job to job in New York. And like the first job I did was making big fake chocolate bars for TV commercials and things like
that. Awesome. Like out of actual chocolate or out of anything else to make it look like chocolate?
No, it was back before CG. So if they did a shot and they had to zoom over a candy bar, like a Snickers bar, that was all fake and it was this big.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
that's perfect. So
it was fun.
I mean, that I got to hear the, so you didn't graduate and then, and 30 years later, they're like, hey, this is your diploma.
Yeah. Like that. I got on TV. I was on some TV shows and the school wanted to exploit me. So they came and contacted me and they're like, hey, we heard you went to school here. I'm like, yeah. They're like, would you like to come talk here? And I'm like, sure. And then they call me back. They're like, we actually can't find any record of you graduating. I'm like, that's a funny story. Yeah. I left with like 11 credits left. So they're like, we can take care of that for you if you come up here. So that was really cool.
That's awesome. I like that you say it. Yeah. I like that you said that they wanted to just exploit you. So that makes sense.
Yeah. Like, look at this guy. He graduated from RIT. You know, he's on television.
Yeah. You're jumping around to all these jobs and you settle on the candy one. What are the other design ones that kind of fall into that if you're jumping around to all these different things?
I know I got to take a deep breath because I literally had 12 jobs in about the first 4 years I was there. But the candy job was the first job. The second one, I'm like, I have to get a really proper design job. So I got a job at this place called the Schecter Group, and they're a packaging design company. And like, I'm talking like they design Diet Coke and they design like, you know, real hardcore stuff. And it was like the most boring thing I've ever experienced in my life. Like they would spend a year working on a Purina dog food bag. And then I can't take this. So I hopped around. Luckily in New York at that time, there were a lot of toy companies, like little toy companies, like upstarts, and they would hire you. And most of them were run by sleaze bags. Mm-hmm. I got some experience at those. And then I finally tumbled into this company called Happiness Express, which was a really fun, I mean, the name's Happiness Express, but it was fun. Everyone was kind of young. You know, we did really cool licenses like Ah Real Monsters and Goosebumps. Mm. And that was like, I really cut my teeth designing toys there.
Yeah. So, I mean, going from designing things that aren't toys to designing toys, what's that kind of like in those first couple jobs?
Well, the job immediately preceding the toy company was I was working in a silkscreen sweatshop.
Okay, so way better.
I was just doing separation. Yeah. And it was actually the lowest stress job I've ever had in my life. Like they quit at 5. I could walk to work, so I didn't have to pay any, you know, transportation fees. But it was just like a nowhere job. And a friend of mine had come into this toy company and he's like, hey, they're looking for a designer. And I was like really nervous because I actually literally never designed a toy or designed product. So I just kind of bullshitted my way into the job.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I showed a portfolio that may or may not have been fully mine. But I got the job.
Yeah.
And like within a year, I was running the boys design department. So it worked out pretty well.
Was this, I mean, did you have to kind of learn on the job then because you hadn't done it before?
Oh, yeah. I bought a really cheap used Macintosh and I was like stayed up all night doing Adobe Illustrator, like learning how to design hang tags and just things like that. And and then once they needed 3D design, I kind of weaseled my way into that department. And by the time I left, I was like a full-fledged toy designer.
And you like gained all the skills and knew how to do it.
Yeah. But I didn't sleep much.
Yeah, I think I'm sensing a theme between college and getting a degree years later and working and
Yeah, I did everything backwards.
Yeah. I mean, and then how did that kind of shape you? Cuz that's, I mean, it's kind of an art thing to like get into that, like engineering and industrial design and all that stuff. is one side of it, and then graphic design kind of goes the art route, and then toys somewhere over here.
Mm-hmm.
So how are we using all these skills that we're learning to finally do toys and just and pursue it?
Okay, well, I'm sort of a workaholic, so yeah. During this whole thing, I also, when I was young, I was like a self-starting street caricature artist. So I always had that like as a little side hustle.
Mm-hmm.
So I could pay for things. And then once I got to New York, I also had a separate path where I was trying to be an illustrator for magazines. And I would bring a portfolio there and I would do caricatures. And sometimes I'd get in like the Village Voice and things like that. But it really wasn't enough to, you know, make a living from.
Yeah.
But that's how I was like really working on my drawing skills and you know, cartooning and things like that. So that comes into play now because I do a lot of illustration for my artwork.
Yeah.
But and then so at that point the company I was working for was going under,
mm-hmm.
and they worked with these toy inventors, and I didn't know what a toy inventor was, but it's actually people who come up with ideas and prototypes, and they shop their ideas around to different companies. So these toy inventors, they saw that the company was kind of going under, and they approached us, and like three of us designers, and asked us if we'd be interested in trying to be toy inventors. And I was the only one who went, and it worked out really well, because it turns out that all my years of like studying the JCPenney's catalogs and the Sears catalogs, and that was like my master class in learning how to invent toys, because I kind of had a photographic memory of all the toys ever made from reading this catalog.
Yeah.
And so I could like access all that information. It was just weird. I was carrying it around with me and didn't know it.
Yeah. Tell me about toy inventing, because that is like when you hear, I mean, the 90s kid in me hears inventor and I immediately am like, oh, weird science, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And then hearing that that toys kind of went through that, where it was like people like Joe Galliani invented Street Sharks and then took it to Mattel. Right. That is such a weird thing to hear coming from an era which I played with Street Sharks, that someone just pitched the idea. So tell me about this idea of being a toy inventor and getting the job.
I was on trial there and I worked my butt off and I came up with a couple of things. And one of them was this thing called Smart Sticks. And Smart Sticks were learning aids for little kids, electronic learning aids.
Mm-hmm.
And so previously, electronic learning aids, this is probably really boring, but you would get this thing and it would have all these buttons on it and you press shapes and colors and that. And the inventor part of it is, I looked at that and I said, why don't we just take all this stuff and separate it into little things like the color stick, the math stick. So they're all little handheld, and kids like to play with remote controls. So the idea was to do all these like little remote controls, but each one would have like colors and shapes on one, math on the other, spelling on the other. And that was my first thing that I did that was kind of a hit.
Yeah.
And it was for Tiger Electronics. And so everything that I do, I have to have a little success to get the confidence to stay with it. And if I have a little success, then I hit the ground running. And then working there, we had this like massive hit, and it was called Diva Stars from Mattel, and they were the predecessors to the Bratz dolls.
Oh yeah.
It was kind of like after Furby, but they are these dolls, and they're electronic, and they talk to each other, and they're animated.
Mm-hmm.
So that was like a massive hit, and so that kind of kept me into the inventing side for a long time.
Yeah. I mean, because you've worked with these companies and I have a love for Furbies, I have to ask, did you have any hand in Furby?
No. I know the guys who did. I love your Furby figure, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
That is a monster.
Yeah.
That thing's awesome.
He's a crazy, it's just out of a love of how creepy the Furby is. And full disclosure, if you would have said, yes, you had a hand in Furby, I don't know what would have happened, but we would have become best friends, I think.
No, I know the guys who did Furby. I was very jealous. And that's kind of why, like, I saw Furby. I'm like, you know what? We got to do a doll like Furby, a girl's fashion doll. So I kind of ripped off Furby to do that.
You did what you did. So how long did toy inventing go? I mean, because I've seen those sketches, and the sketches, like, it's you've posted them. It's like the Star Wars, like, pencil holders and kind of stuff. And so
that was like freelance.
Yeah. So when you start this with toy inventing, at what point did we kind of pivot from Mattel and maybe those dolls to like freelance and pitching them, and still, what's crazy is still having those sketches. And so, like, how did we do that?
I always kind of like kept myself open to working with other companies, as long as I wasn't like inventing, because I wouldn't say those are inventing. That's like I'm trying to think of what else I worked on. Star Wars, it's like, you know, I'm not really coming up with anything new for Star Wars, so I would freelance and just knock out drawings and stuff for Galoob Toys, you know, who Hasbro eventually bought. And Toy Max is another company that I worked for. And I kind of phased that out because it's just like too much work. So I moved to a company called Bang Zoom Design. I still work with them in Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. And we just across the board, we do all kinds of like animatronics and Elmos. We did the Elmo toy last year, the Elmo slide. Mm-hmm. And it's Elmo doing the electric slide. And we've had a lot of, you know, successes. So
yeah.
I'm still doing that full time. And I do the artwork.
Okay. So I didn't even know that. In my head, you were a full time toy, like, because I only see that side of you, the Tic Tacs and all the different stuff. So you still work full time in toy design then?
Mm-hmm.
That's incredible. Your life is a joy.
It is.
Yeah.
It's very full, you know, and I have to find time to devote to my family. So that's also, you know, I sleep like 1 hour a night, not literally, but I don't sleep very much.
Yeah. When did you become,
you got to sacrifice something.
Yeah. And I mean, sleep is the thing to sacrifice. When did you
Empire Blister? Empire Blisters, specializing in action figure blisters. 2.75 inch or 1.82. 19 different styles. Two sizes of clamshell figure cases. Four different bulk pack options. Quantities of 100 sample packs available. Empire Blisters.
Now sponsors Toys on Tap.
That means a 10% off coupon on checkout. Use code Toys on Tap 10. That's COYSOMTAP 10.
Empire Blisters.
Pivot to doing this full time with one company rather than working with a bunch of different companies? What year are we talking here?
Like 17 years ago.
Maybe. Okay.
Yeah. And at first I did it remotely. I used to live in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And then I eventually, Bang Zoom Design is here. And my friend who worked at Mattel moved over there, and he's kind of running the place, or he's one of the partners, so he kind of asked me to move down here, and I didn't have anything going on. I was at a point in my life where it was a good time to get the hell out of New Jersey.
Yeah.
So I came down here, and I like it. I love Cincinnati. It's really nice.
Yeah. I think one of the dreams that I have is working with a toy company. The only issue, no skill set. Yeah, like podcasting for a toy company doesn't seem like it's a good skill set to have.
Who did your Furby toy?
My concept, and then sculpted by a guy named Mark. He goes by More Horrific.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so we worked together, and I commissioned it for the Furby show
Cool.
that I hosted. But yeah, so it's like I've done resin toys or have concept designed and I have my own, but not a good enough skill set to do like toy company.
Yeah.
So
but you could work, you could do marketing for a toy company. It's like, there's all kinds of things to do.
Don't, Steve, don't get me started. I'll leave my job. So when you 17 years in doing this with a toy company is, I mean, you're dedicated. This is your life. So then at what point do we start doing art? Because okay, I do want to talk about Tic Tacs. I do want to talk about toys. I want to talk about so much that kind of involves your artistic endeavors.
Okay. So up until that point, a certain point, I didn't have any hobbies. I'm trying to think.
Yeah.
No, it's just, I was kind of floundering. Like I wasted like 10 years playing video games, maybe.
Yeah.
Where I didn't have anything going on because I was like, actually, I was content to do toy inventing and make the money from that. But then just like things changed and I was just really bored. And so I'm friends with this guy, Jason Freeney. I don't know if you know who he is. Gummy Fetus.
Yeah.
So he and I used to work together. And he started doing his like, you know, dissected characters.
Unreal.
Yeah. And I'm like, wow, it's like, this is really cool. He just came up with a concept and he's running with it. So I was just kind of like sitting around. I'm like, I really need a thing like that. I need something. And I used to take peanuts at work and I would draw on them with a magic marker. Mm-hmm. And I would find one that looks like shaped like you. And then I'd draw your face on it. And I'm like, I just thought that could be something. So I stayed home one weekend and I was going to do the Ramones, the whole band, because I love the Ramones. And I ended up getting Joey done. It was like a lot more work than I thought.
Yeah.
And I did this Ramones character. And it was like, and then Monday I posted it on Facebook. And just people went nuts over it. And like, so I had a little success. So it's like empowered me to do more. So I just would stay up every night just doing a different, like Batman, Aquaman. And they were just really horrible at first. But then they just got slicker and better. And I became really good at drawing tiny faces and painting faces. And that just snowballed. And it, you know, led to a lot of things. And a lot of, you know, people wanting to hire me. I was on TV shows. I got invited to have shows. I got invited to speak at schools. So it was really cool. And then that just gave me the confidence to actually just become an artist. Cause up until that point, I'd never done art for art's sake before. Everything was a purpose, like designing a toy or whatever. So I never did anything just for the fun of it. And then, that led me to sculpting and it led me to doing that, you know, making toys and like art toys, not actual, the kind of toys that I do every day. But like I do those wooden animated toys that stuff is just,
It's so unique to the toy world. We, I say we as if I'm speaking for everyone, and I will at this point, I will. It's such a good addition to the toy world because it has such a nostalgic factor. I remember having my parents, they had a pool toy like that. They, as you pulled, it moved. And I remember playing with that as a kid. And to see that, I think you made the Shining one.
Yes.
Yeah. And that one stuck out to me because it was like something that was so horrific or so gruesome or like that type of movie is this fun child's play thing. And the way that it moved was so, and so seeing that kind of stuff and how it's evolved from starting with something as small as peanuts is insane.
Yeah.
How did you, I think when it comes to like faces and painting and all these things and doing art for art's sake, how are you developing this skill set? How are you, I mean, to start with something as small as a peanut and then go even smaller and then like these crap, like how do you do it?
I don't know. I just like it all goes back to doing caricatures.
Yeah.
You know, and I have a real knack for drawing faces. So that's basically the starting point to doing Peanuts and everything else. And and everything I do is kind of a caricature based thing. You know, the Shining toys, the caricature of Jack Nicholson and Shelley Duvall. I have one here that.
Yep. Yeah, we're doing show and tell.
I dropped. Let me get this here. But this is.
Holy jeez.
Alien.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Just finished this.
For an art show or just because?
I have a show at the end of the year at Heroes Complex Gallery. Heroes Complex Gallery. So anyway, it's not working because it's a glass table. But
yeah,
this guy, he hops up and spins around while she shoots him.
Oh my gosh.
So I mean, it's a caricature.
Yeah. It's just insane. One, to be skilled enough to make those, but two, to be able to envision how it's going to move and how it's going to like run and doing the mechanics of it. Cause that seems so far outside the art world.
Yeah.
And so how is your brain able to shift between like we're doing art, but also this is how it has to move or else it won't function.
Well, it's funny because where I work, every single person is a way better mechanical guy than me. they're basically building robots there.
Yeah.
So, and they kind of look at my things as silly little experiments, but they actually help me a lot with like figuring out the cams and things like that. So, you know, I just study toys. I just take toys apart, you know, look at them and see how they work.
Yeah.
And I really like old toys. I don't really care so much for, I mean, even though I help invent them, I don't really care to play with modern robotic type, you know, things, even though Furby's really cool. Furby's the gold standard.
Oh, that's say it again for the people in the back. It definitely is. Holy moly.
I studied Furby like unbelievably, like every nuance of it just because I was so pissed off when it came out.
Yeah. I think my love for Furby is that we created it and no one understood. Like there were so many misunderstandings about the creation of it and how it got banned from like CIA buildings and how it couldn't people like Bluetooth didn't really exist. And so they were like, oh, it's listening. It wasn't. And
no,
everyone claimed it was. And it was such a crazy. I just love that.
Yeah.
When you. Go ahead.
Oh, no, it was like Richard Levy. I know the guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Caleb Chung. They're the two guys who worked on it.
Are they both still alive?
Mm-hmm.
How do I get in touch with those two guys so that we can talk?
Because I can put you in touch after this.
Oh, maybe you are my favorite person. I'm just so fascinated by that kind of stuff. And I think that falls under toy invention because there's no reason that toy should have ever been invented. It doesn't resemble anything else. It doesn't even look like anything else. I mean, it got in trouble for looking like a Mogwai from Gremlins, but other than that, it's such a unique thing.
Oh yeah. It's a virtual life.
Yeah.
You know,
Tell me about going from peanut sized and then going up and then going down to Tic Tac.
Okay. So the peanut size thing, it's really cool for online and, you know, people commission custom ones and, you know, it got me a lot of notoriety because it's so weird and, you know, but at the end of the day, like if I have a show at a gallery, they don't present well.
Right.
You know, I have to put the peanut there and then I do a huge blow up photograph of what it looks like just so people can see it to give it any sort of presence. So with that problem, I started making bigger stuff like wooden wall dioramas and things like that, like kind of based on how I used to do caricatures for magazines and stuff, like real kind of block print type stuff. And that seemed to work out better and the wooden toys. I started like Gallery 1988 in LA some of my first stuff I ever did for them were these wooden toys, because they, you know, they have a better presence.
Yeah.
You know, people walk into a gallery, they see that, they're like, well, that's something different. So, and then the Tic Tacs, that was a weird one, because I was just thinking one day, I'm like, how small can I paint?
Yeah.
So I'm like, can I paint on a Tic Tac? And I was eating Tic Tac, and I painted Pennywise the Clown on one.
Mm-hmm.
And the new film was coming out, and I put him inside the Tic Tac box, and I painted a Tic Tac red, so it looked like the red balloon.
Yeah.
In the film. And it, you know, it went viral like overnight. And I'm like, this is cool, because before that, I tried to work with Planters,
mm-hmm.
Peanut Company, and I did work with them. But they would hire me to do like people retiring from Planters. Yeah. Like, and I'm like, no, I really want to do something like, you know, cool, like a TV commercial or whatever, but they weren't into that. So like, maybe if I go to a company that, you know, already has an established, you know, thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I started painting Tic Tacs, and then the Tic Tac company contacted me. They didn't want to work with me either. All they wanted to do is send me free Tic Tac. So
that's cool.
Like, yeah, every month they'd send me like a case of Tic Tac, and they're like, these are inspiration to paint. So anyway,
that's crazy. No one needs a Tic Tac case. No one needs that.
My scheming never worked out, but yeah. You know, just, I really like painting on Tic Tacs. For some reason, I love making like little figures.
Yeah.
You know?
It's so interesting that, I mean, the problem mm-hmm. of having peanuts was already so small. And so you had to put a picture. Mm-hmm. And so instead of beating that, you went even smaller. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've seen, for anyone that hasn't seen, I've gotten to see one up close at Toy du Jour. There was one in the case. I think it was a Garfield one.
Oh yeah. The Garfield.
And
are you based up there?
No, I just got lucky. Hosted the Furby art show I did.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
That's
right. And I saw that, and it is man, I'm trying to find the words. Have you heard someone say when they go see the Mona Lisa that like, wow, it is small? your brain automatically says small when it's Tic Tac, but when you see it, mm-hmm. like the intensity of having to do like the backer and the blister and everything that is this small is insane. And then it's in like a case that like, and you did it, you nailed it. You got it. Like you did it so well. And so it's like my brain, I don't know what it was doing. Like I knew it was a Tic Tac. And then when I saw it, I was like, oh my God, that is small. That's insane. So the jump then is, how did we start getting into toy art shows, and how did we start making that jump into the independent toy world?
We interrupt this broadcast of Toys on Tap to bring you this. Meanwhile, in a galaxy of bootleg treasures.
DOV2, we have engine failure. We must crash land on DKE Toy Planet.
Oh my, we're doomed.
Wait. Salvation! Hooray! We're saved, DLV2! Limited edition custom artist-made action figures and DKE toys!
Check out www.dketoys.com for a full catalog.
Hooray for custom action figures!
DKE!
I probably, because I met Dustin from Earth to Kentucky.
Yeah.
He was having all kinds of shows in his gallery, and it's about 5 miles from here. So I just kind of worked my way into that, and I started doing like fake Hot Wheels cars.
Yeah,
like I did the severed ear from Blue Velvet as a Hot Wheels car.
Yeah,
and so I was just trying not to do the same type of things. But, you know, there's so many people that do that kind of stuff great that you just got to kind of find your own way in there. You know, try to do something that nobody else does or territory that, you know, I'm not going to do any Star Wars parodies.
Yeah.
Because there's just so many of them out there. People who do it fantastically. So, you know, like Disgustin Justin. Yeah. I mean, he's doing David Byrne figures. They're hilarious, you know. So he kind of find his way in there.
His work is just intense. It's so good, and it reminds me of, like, whenever I see anything that has that aesthetic, it just reminds me of him. So yeah.
He is like, his raw talent is like off the charts, like his lettering and packaging.
Yeah.
So as far as custom figures, I just kind of have a very wide range of things that I do. Like, okay, I have one right here. So this is D is for Dead.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And actually, I'm working my way through the alphabet. So I have the whole entire alphabet drawn up, and I'm just doing all these figures. Like, K is for Kaiju.
Yeah.
You know? So I'm going to do, like, theming on this. And this is the first one.
Is it, like, for an art show or just because you want to do this?
Well, no, this, I just wanted to do it, but I might put it in an art show. Sometimes I just do a limited run and I sell them from my store. So, like, for Christmas, I did dead light bulbs. So they were all little light bulbs and coffins, and they're all, like, you know, drawn and dead and sunken lips and stuff. So it's just like, whenever I get an idea, I just execute it, and then I figure out what to do with it, you know, after I'm done. So
when you do these things, I mean, that's some dedication. Like, I think the hard part that artists get stuck in is we forget to create, and we end up creating for shows, or we create because we want to sell something, or and so having the desire to do all 26 letters of the alphabet, or to do, like, to have the idea for the dead light bulbs, like, how are you doing that and staying in the space of, like, just wanting to create?
I mean, that's what I do. It's like, some things, like, I have a specific purpose, but most of the time I don't have a I did do a lot of commissions over the last, like, 5 years, like, tons. Like, so basically my output was dictated by what people hired me to do. So I kind of, like, wean myself off of that, and I don't take many commissions at all anymore. And I just, you know, come up with stuff, because it's like, I have a couple galleries. I have one in New York and one in LA and one in New Orleans. That if I need to have a show, and I need 20 things for a show, so I'll just, like, pull things out of my ass, basically, and just, you know, it just depends on, you know, like the Hero Complex Gallery in LA, they're mostly pop culture. So, you know, like the alien toy and things like that, that's what they feed on. That's what they sell all day. So any kind of idea I have in that vein, I'll do for them.
Yeah.
And then the New Orleans gallery is kind of a weirder, you know, I could just do crazy stuff. Like, I did one of my favorite things that I made last year was, I made a medicine cabinet. I called it the Menacing Cabinet.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just all different things that you find in your medicine cabinet, but they're all, like, alive. They're kind of monstrous and interacting with each other on the shelves. And that was a lot of fun. And some guy bought it to actually put in his bathroom. So.
Nice. That's so crazy. How do you, being in these shows, I mean, cause you are a very talented artist, and so you can host your own gallery shows and do all that stuff. What makes you come back to being in the shows with all the other artists? Like, what brings you back to those ones, knowing that you could host your own gallery?
I mean, it doesn't matter. I don't really have an ego. I actually love the camaraderie.
Yeah.
You know, just hanging out with other artists and stuff. Do you know who Jonathan Queen is?
Yeah.
Okay, so Jonathan, he's kind of like an amazing painter.
Yeah.
Like, one of the most talented painters I've ever met. And he does shows. It's like, and I think he likes the camaraderie too.
Yeah, he was on the podcast at one point, and he's so frustrating in that how talented he is.
Yeah,
and yet he still wants to interact and like still wanted to be on the show and stuff. But it's like, you are so far beyond me. Recognize it, please.
He's funny because it's like, Jonathan, you do the greatest paintings in the world. Why do you want to do an action figure?
Yeah.
And it's just, he just wants to do it. And, you know, I give him kudos for that.
Yeah. With all that in mind, what's next for you? What shows are coming up? What galleries do you have? Where are you trying to head with your art career?
I've always found that like trying to scheme and come up with ideas and say, I'm going to do this and make $1 million, that like doesn't work out.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like, you just do the thing that makes you the happiest. And usually people, you know, enough people get in line that you can make money at it or whatever. So, with that being said, I'm trying to knock out 30 things for this show at Hero Complex Gallery. It's on November 2nd. It's tentatively called the Halloween Hangover Show.
Awesome.
Yeah. And I'm going to be out there, and it's in LA, and I'm trying to do 30. I have about half the work done for it right now, and I have to finish it by like October.
Yeah. So I mean, 30 is insane.
Yeah. And I'm doing big things. Big wooden pieces, and I'm doing some micro stuff too, but that'll be filler.
Yeah. When you do these pieces in these upcoming shows and things, are you, I know that you've split it where sometimes you'll do runs, sometimes you're doing these gallery style. Do you ever kind of merge those to where when you're doing a gallery, there's more, like some pieces will have the ability to buy multiple of them or.
Sometimes I do that. I'll probably do that for this show if I have time.
Yeah.
Another thing I like to do is I got a series called Death by Chocolate.
Yeah.
Where I'll take like a big Snickers bar, and it's like the Snickers bar is a skull, and instead of saying Snickers, it says dead.
Yeah.
And they're big, they're oversized. And I like doing those. So I might do a bunch of those for the show, like a new one that I haven't done.
Yeah.
And
that's so good. When you are coming up with like if they either ask you to do these pieces or if you go to a gallery and you say, I want to knock this out. What's the process to coming up with 30 different pieces?
Well, this one, because it is right after Halloween, I was thinking of doing some horror. I was going to do it all horror stuff. Mm. And then that's my intention. It's my pure intention. And then I'll get an idea. And then I was just like, I could do this too.
Yeah.
And I could I'll show you one right here. This is, I just went to the 20th anniversary of Napoleon Dynamite, and I was inspired. I made this Napoleon Dynamite piece.
It's like him
with the action figure hanging off the bus.
Yeah, it's phenomenal.
Thank you. So that idea popped in my head like 2 weeks ago. So I kind of put aside what I was working on and knocked this out just to do it. And I liked it.
Yeah.
And then I'm back. I've laid out like 7 horror things, like Frankenstein's monster, Bride of Frankenstein, things like that. So they're all kind of like this, like big wooden pieces. And I have X amount in mind if I can finish them.
Yeah.
And so at least it'll be something substantial. So when you walk in, you see things that are larger than a Tic Tac.
Yeah. it's crazy. John Heater has been on the podcast, and it is a weird.
Oh, yeah.
Because when I was in middle school, that movie came out, and we were all in awe of how whatever that movie is. And I remember feeling that. And then when he came on, you quickly realize that is definitely a character. He has nothing in common with Napoleon Dynamite.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
No, so they have a tour going on, and they go from city to city. So I was lucky enough to see them here, and they did a screening, and then they like a Q&A, and it was fun. It was funny because my wife had never seen it.
Oh,
so, yeah,
was she horribly unimpressed?
No, she was laughing because she, you know, it was so preloaded with fans.
Yeah,
that everyone was just laughing at every single nuance, and she got into it after about. You know, it took her a while to get in the groove, but once she was in, she was howling with everyone else.
Yeah. How funny. Yeah. With all of that and the shows coming up, how can people get in touch with you if you will take on a commission, or how do people get in touch with you for other shows or collabs? How do we plug everything and do all that?
It's just at Steve Cassino, like on pretty much every platform. And I have a website, stevecassino.com, that's kind of like a gateway. You know, you can contact me through there. All my links are there. So I had the website, and then I let it lapse. And then a magician from Las Vegas stole it, the fake Steve Cassino.
Yeah.
And then he let it lapse, and then I got it back. So.
There we go. If it lapses again, I'm coming for it, Steve.
Okay, good.
Steve, it's been so good to have you on Toys on Tap. Thanks for making
time. Thank you for having me.